Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Mike Johnson, Allie Mack, Squid Billy, Dylon, hanging out with you here on this Tuesday morning. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We're going to get to some Falcons offensive line content, some explosive play content here in about 2 minutes. I do got to tell you, and I brought this up to Allie this morning, Bo, this Instagram video hit my feed last night that blew my mind, and I'm going to have to look it back up and see what the source was. It was about tides, high tide and low tides. And this guy says, you know, what's one thing that people don't pay attention to enough? The fact that there's not actually high tide and low tide. The earth just rotating into the deeper water. And I was like, what?
What does that mean?
Okay.
So Isn't that what the tide is?
Yeah, yeah. So essentially what it is like the water's not rising and falling. We're just like the earth, the actual landmass is going underneath where the water already is.
It twisted my brain this morning.
Yeah. But isn't that.
So just picture the water.
That's what we're calling the tide, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You just play ball with me for a minute, okay? I don't need Abe Gordon sitting over here.
I'm not
left.
Abe Gordon,
my point is that the water on the earth is like egg shaped, and the landmass is just rotating underneath it.
Okay. But this is what they've called tide for years is what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that they didn't know this when they named it. I think they're like, well, we got to call it something. So we can't call it.
Well, the point is that the water's not coming up and down where you live. The water just exists where it stays.
The scientists named it that and they've known that. But us average Joes here have just kind of thought, I'm standing on the beach. The tide is coming
tide's
in and
coming
out.
Tide's coming in. No, yeah.
That's
tide's
not
coming
the case.
In. It's like not the case. We're actually going towards it. We're just moving towards the tide. Blew my mind. I was sitting there listening to this
Where
video.
Who put this out?
You know, it was like Neil deGrasse Tyson or somebody. Yeah. I don't know. One of these scientists.
Okay. Well, those people have a tendency to just reword things just so they continue to be the smartest guy.
It worked
room.
On me.
What? Clearly did, but it's not working on me.
Would you like another one to blow your mind?
I'm sorry. I wasn't cool enough for Bo this morning. Go ahead.
So, if an alien species 65 million light years away looked at Earth with a telescope, they would see dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Wait, what? You're talking about 65 million years ago?
Because of light speed. Yeah, that's
Yeah, because of light speed.
No, I'm like, if an alien did it right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It would take that much time for the light of the dinosaur image to get to their telescope. Yeah, dude.
So they're looking right now, and they see dinosaurs.
Hold on. How did
the tide thing not get you, but this one does?
I'm not. So if there really was a thing as an alien, and he's in outer space somewhere right now, looking with a telescope.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just see me, why wouldn't he just die before he gets to see me? Why would he see I don't understand why he would see dinosaurs.
He's 65 million light years away. He's seeing Littlefoot.
The light coming off of the dinosaurs, to take it long enough to travel to his telescope would take 65 million years.
But my point is when he's looking through, the dinosaurs have been gone. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they've been gone. That's the point, though. That's why it's crazy.
No. No, he would die before he saw something.
Again, how did the time thing not get you? But this one does. This is simple. This is Neil deGrasse Tyson telling you this again.
Well, clearly, I don't think much of him. Who put this out?
Reddit.
Yeah, see? More of my
There
speed.
You go. There you go.
Although, I don't believe this one.
I will say, and I hit my son with this one the other night. It's along this same topic. People don't realize how long dinosaurs lived, on Earth. And it said, my son was looking at this thing the other day because he loves dinosaurs. And it said the T-Rex lived closer to humans than it did the Stegosaurus. T-Rex in chronological order, we are closer to living to a T-Rex than the T-Rex is to the Stegosaurus. That's how far apart we just think of Stegosaurus and T-Rex just sipping out of water at the same time.
We're hanging out.
Well, no, yeah, T-Rex would have killed Stegosaurus.
Okay, fine, but you're missing the point, Abe.
The point is
that it's crazy to think that there was that much time between those two dinosaurs. Like, they were here for a long freaking time.
And they were different. They were, to your point, they were different eras.
Yeah.
You know?
And Mesozoic and whatever else.
Yeah, I mean.
It's crazy.
There's a lot going on in that stuff that we don't really comprehend. It's not all Jurassic Park.
The chronological calendar of the universe, or the Earth, and, humans didn't show up till 11:59 p.m. on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Like, if it was a calendar year, you get all the way to December 31st, 11:59 p.m., that's when humans showed up. That's crazy.
I think we've been, again, this is where our culture has, you know, shaped us.
Please let us know.
We grew up thinking that the dinosaur era was Jurassic Park. Like, everything we know about dinosaurs has been shaped by Jurassic Park.
And there's another one about to come out.
I was going to say, we're on, like, what, the third trilogy?
Yeah, this one's Scarlett Johansson, though, I think.
I'm stoked about
Scarlett Johansson? Another what happened to the Howard chick?
Yeah.
Bryce Dallas
she resigned.
Howard.
She resigned. I mean, after you go through a situation like that, you probably quit your job.
All right. Apparently, we got pivot.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say. The dinosaur. I was like, what happened in real life? I thought I was thinking real life when he said that.
I was just going to say, apparently Scarlett Johansson has always been a fan of Jurassic Park. She's always wanted to be in a Jurassic Park movie. So
I do, too. This is it's crazy.
This
me and her have so much in common.
Fulfill a dream.
Yeah, same. Same. Anyways. We got to go to some of the Falcons offensive line conversation. I've been wanting to have this conversation since this weekend. Dwayne Ledford, during rookie minicamp, visited with the media this past weekend. And, Bo, you and I had this conversation, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about Bijan Robinson and the explosive plays and how he can be able to get that done. I look back on guys like, you know, Chris Johnson, Adrian Peterson, being able to skinny up the safeties, kind of learn what to do once you get to the third level of the defense and create those long explosive plays, which as good as Bijan has been, as good as this offense has been in the run game, we haven't seen that broken tackle at the third level that can lead to the 60-yard run, the 65-yard run, the 70. Dwayne Ledford kind of dove into this a little bit, and he started with talking about continuity along the offensive line. Here's Dwayne Ledford talking about the culture inside of that room.
It's fun. It's a good group of guys, and that's the one thing about it that you get excited about this part of it is just when you get in that room, what those guys have said as a foundation for our culture, like it's exciting to be around, and you can't wait to get to work with them.
Yeah. You know what? And it brought back memories, me hearing that. I think you'll like this, of we had such a good group when I got drafted here. Todd McClure was obviously the leader of that group. Loved Tyson Klebo to death. Still talk to those guys all the time. Harvey Dahl, I overlapped with him for about a year. Blaylock, Sam Baker. Those guys were so much fun. Will Svitek. Those guys were so much fun to be around. And when you go back, and anybody that has talked to Todd McClure, if you've ever seen an interview with Todd McClure, he always tells you those last two or three years of his career were the best of his career. And not just because you had success, it was because the guys inside of that room, inside of that locker room, had so much fun. I think a lot of Falcons fans remember back on that group of the nasty boys of Harvey Dahl and Tyson Klebo, and Todd McClure was part of that group. But I just love hearing Dwayne Ledford talk about the culture inside of that offensive line room, because usually that's the first thing to come when you talk about great offenses.
Yeah, and I think we go back and the 2010 season, what was so successful for the Falcons, they were – That was the last year of what are they offensively? Like, as in, they were run – you were run first.
Yes,
then.
That was the malarkey, yes.
And that's actually what happened is that was – remember, I don't know if – I mean, the thought process outside was you went and got Julio in that next draft to make the offense explosive. Because remember, Julio's rookie year was 11.
Yep.
And – that was actually what got Malarkey got, is he didn't adapt to it the way that they thought he should. That was one of the reasons. And you know, when he, air quote, moved on. But that offensive line was the – everybody thought it was like Michael Turner. But to me, it started with y'all. And that was what set the tone for this team. And you talk about how good this room is, and there's one name that keeps coming to mind about the – there's one young name on this offensive line group that's going to enter the season, and it's Josh Gray from Oregon State. He's also from Rancho Cucamonga, California, which only thing I ever think of when I hear Rancho Cucamonga is next Friday. And so he grew up with Day-Day and Craig and Uncle Leroy. Or I don't, that movie came on the day we watched it. But that's a guy that's going to that's a guy that has a chance to play anywhere on this offensive line. And we've talked about Ryan Neusel taking over the center. The reason you don't have any worries about Neusel taking over for this season at center is A, he did it for 8 games last year, but B, the group and how good everything else is around him, and that Gray is a guy that you might cross train into that position if Neusel moves on after this year or the year after.
Yeah, and it's not only to me, and like you said, we have 4.5 returning starters on the offensive line. You also have Kyle Hinton. You also got Storm Norton. You also have the depth behind those as well. And you
Hennessy
talk about
you named the other day.
Yeah, and Hennessy, again, I don't know what the future holds for him. I'm a big fan of Matt Hennessy. I think he fits a number of different roles, and he's cheap.
And he knows what you do.
And he knows what to do. So I think that there's always an option for him, and maybe that's a guy that they kind of bring along as well. Here's Dwayne Ledford, though, and this is where I want you guys to pay attention. How do we create more explosive touchdown runs?
It takes all 11. We talk about that. And so for us, how much longer can we strain? You know, just finishing blocks longer, being willing and able to strain longer than that guy in front of us. Seeing more guys downfield, you know, that's a big part of it. Like if we get an opportunity to get the second, third level, that's going to help us create explosive as well.
I distinctly remember, and I think you'll appreciate this, the first time I ever met Mike Mularkey. And he was really – he and Paul Boudreau were really the co-owners of this, talking about finishing down the field. It was like the biggest thing for Mike Mularkey. And I always credit him with this because I liked Mularkey. I love the way he ran things offensively, as did obviously a number of other people. But the first thing that happened when I walked into Mike Mularkey's office when I came on my visit to the Atlanta Falcons, he shows me video of the current offensive line and how on the – thing. I think it was the Vikings, the very first play of the game, the Vikings defensive tackle is, you know, sprinting after the ball downfield. And as the tackle is being made, like still being made in front of him, this defense tackle from Minnesota is turning around looking behind him because he knows that the Falcons offensive line is coming for him at that point. It's 20 yards down the field. It's one of the first plays of the game. And Mike Mularkey is like, this is what we have established here. And this is what we want our culture to be. We want our offense. We want the defensive tackle to have turned on the film and know that we are coming for him down the field to finish this play. I love that about Mike Mularkey, and I love that about that group. And you always knew that those guys and Harvey Dahl and Ty McClure and all those guys, they were coming for you at some point down the field, and they were going to finish those blocks. I think that's what Dwayne Ledford's talking about.
That's what I loved about that team, and that's what something Arch and I have talked at about in length. And I remember your boy. When your boy took over, Joe Hawley, and I remember watching a play, and I think it was in, it might have been Tampa, and the play is ending, and here comes Joe Hawley. I mean, just cleaning someone straight out, and it stalls a little bit of a fray, a little scrum there created because of it, and it was just like. I remember talking to Arch, and Arch was like, yeah, I mean, that's how you get that reputation. You don't blank with us. Yeah. That nastiness. You're nasty, but you're not – if nothing is wrong about what he did.
Yeah.
It's the whole just head of the swivel. The play. You play to what? You play to the whistle.
Here's what Mike Smith used to say. You like this one? Play to the echo of the whistle. Right? You play to the echo of the whistle. I used to love that coming out of him. Man.
And that's how – when you do is when – you know, remember when the training camp that was Hard Knocks at 14 seasons? We're not tough. We're soft. I'm not sure if you're still there for that speech when it happened or in the room where that happened, but it was like.
Wasn't 14.
It was 13. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It was 14.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know.
And I remember like that team, that offensive line never, ever got accused of that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, I love that, man. We got to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the NFL, man. Schedule release is starting to trickle out. Also, some news about a guy we at one time wanted to come here. We'll give you the latest on Trey Hendrickson and also updates on Ronald Acuna and Spencer Strider you don't want to miss. Stick with us. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's the Morning Shift. Mike, Ali, Dylon, Squidbilly, and, man, the conversation's still rolling about evidently – Bo's lack of understanding about light travel, you know what I mean, and just how that works exactly.
Oh, I don't think you did. Look, I'm not a simpleton like you.
Is that what
where
it is? Okay.
you know how the rising and tides kind of
blows my mind that you don't
boggle
understand
your mind,
the telescope.
But the fact that you don't understand that if I look in a telescope right now, why would I see the past and not the future?
If you're 65
the
million
future.
Light years away.
Yeah,
you would see that. That makes sense.
By the time, no, it doesn't, because yeah, I'm looking now. Why would I see 65 million years ago?
It took that long for the light to reach the alien. That's why.
The alien would be dead then by the time you saw it.
You're not. That's not the point.
That's the point.
That's not true. Not only is it not the point, it's not true. Because he's seeing when the light is hitting his tusk. I don't know. We got to move on.
I did take video footage of this debate going back and forth in the studio, and I'm going to put it up at 929 Morning Shift as soon as I bleep out some expletives.
Yeah, I had to.
Let the record show, I did not have the potty mouth.
And just as a quick preview, when you should go check out this video, they were getting to the point where I could hear them through the double pane glass. I heard a lot of fist banging on the desk, and I heard loud noises.
You're not listening.
Oh man,
we do need to mention some. Some would consider big news for the Braves.
Okay,
obviously the win last night. That was their seventh straight game of swapping one run games. And they've basically one loss, one loss, one loss. So it's not been great there. But Ronald Acuna Jr. has officially sounds like he's officially starting his rehab stint down in Florida, and then they're going to have him up on some minor games. We have the research team here, crack research team, which is obviously it's Allie and myself because we can't trust Mike's statistics.
Right.
has that he has 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
And to complete that, position players in Major League Baseball have 20 days. Allie, what would be that set return date? Because I do believe one thing Mike and I have agreed on and gotten right, that it was always going to be around the end of the month, beginning of next month. Mm-hmm. Are we correct?
You're correct. It's June 1st.
So yeah. June 1st would be the 20 days. He has to be up by June 1st.
He does. Can I make a prediction about June 1st?
Go ahead.
Or his first home run, Ronald Acuna's first home run.
Okay.
He's not going to wear a double bubble hat.
Mm.
So it won't be a walk-off.
Won't be a walk-off.
Well, no. I'm just saying in general, you're not going to catch Ronald Acuna in a double bubble hat.
Yeah, he won't let himself be caught.
He will not be caught in it.
I don't know, though. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. Somebody puts it on his head. He can't rip it off.
Also, how long before a certain hat company decides that that's some kind of infringement? You remember, Dylan, I know you, Dylan, you remember when the Braves had the big hat?
Yeah, yes. Big hat. Yeah,
yeah, and then a certain hat company came out and said, oh, no, hey, that's not copyrighted. That's not a licensed MLB hat. You cannot wear it.
And we only got to do it. We only got the big hat celebration for what, like two or three games?
I think 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks.
Maybe a week or so. Yeah. And
so
then,
frustrating, man.
I know, man. I love the big hat.
There's also the news that Spencer Strider, we did not know what they would do with him, right? It would be Strider said, look, it's up to them. I'm ready. I think I'm ready, but I understand it's been a while. If they want me to do some kind of rehab, they gave him the option between a simulated game or going down and having a rehab start. And they picked the simulated game. So I believe it's Wednesday he will throw a simulated game.
It'll be tomorrow. Hey, can I go conspiracy theorist on this? I think that they are not sure what exactly to do with the roster at this point. It's almost like they're punting. So they can just kick the can down the curb. You know, they're like, I don't know who we're going to let go. So let's just push it back a little bit.
So
not sure.
We'll figure it out tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, tomorrow.
Yeah,
no,
something
tomorrow.
Always pops up. This is when the I'm telling you guys, said this last year and got it right. This is when one of those phantom shoulder fatigue injuries shows up where somebody hits the 15 day.
And they're gonna I'm pretty stern in that they're gonna do the 6-man rotation. And so that means it'll be somebody from the bullpen. And I don't think they can do Blewett.
No, they can't do Blewett. And Montero had a good outing last time he was out. I don't know what they'll do. They're out of options for everybody, essentially. So somebody is gonna be on the chopping block.
As far as pitchers, if I'm not mistaken, it's Elder and Smith Shawver who are the only one that have options.
Yeah.
Cause Grant's up. You know, he's out of options, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah.
They're at the end of the rope with a lot of these guys. So, yeah. they've got some decisions to be able to make.
And you're not sending a guy down that just did what AJ did the last three.
It's going to be tough. And like I said, this is one of those times of the year where it's like, oh, didn't your shoulder hurt? I swear you told me your shoulder was hurting. Is it? Okay, cool. We'll put you on the IL. Anyways, let's go in the huddle. Schedule release abound in the NFL. We're still waiting on Good Morning Football to be able to put out more of the international games. Hopefully there's some news for the Falcons coming down the line. But, Allie, it looks like maybe Prime Video is putting out some stuff right now.
Yeah, Kansas City Chiefs and Denver Broncos will play Christmas night. Kansas will host Denver, and the game will be televised by Prime Video, and that is part of Amazon's Thursday Night Football package.
The question is, hearing you say that and this kind of going through my mind, is Christmas on a Thursday this year?
It must be.
Although it could be, you know, one of those things where it's like ESPN on ABC. Like, doesn't mean. It could be a part of the Thursday night package and be on a Wednesday, but I think it is on a Thursday this year.
Yeah, I'm pretty positive it is. It's funny, Amy and I were having this conversation. We were talking about Christmas plans. We were Mother's Day dinner, we were talking about Christmas plans, and she drops the, for Christmas, And I said, oh, I'm doing a long smoke for Christmas unless I'm working. And she's like, she goes, come on. She goes, they're not going to give y'all a Christmas game. And I said, Amy, she goes, come on.
Dang, Amy.
She goes,
wow.
She literally said, and I swear I did not know that my wife had this sports mileage. She goes, first off, you're not on a Heritage team. And second,
whoa,
y'all haven't been good enough the last few years.
Dang.
I was like, I go, you don't know what can happen? What can happen?
See, Allie, that's the difference between my household and Bo's. He gets disrespected constantly. My teams don't get disrespected in my own house, okay? Especially the ones I work for.
Shout out to Amy, though, with a big-time Falcons reality check, man. You're right in there.
Off the top.
First off, nothing she says is wrong. And second off, no, your wife just leaves you at home while she goes gambling and hanging out, and you're sitting at home with the kids.
Right.
But I'm the one playing MGA night on Thursday. It's not her.
Anyways, that's cool. I like the Christmas games last year, which I think were on a Wednesday last year, not on a Thursday, but I think it was good. It made sense for me for the NFL to be on Christmas, even though it doesn't always happen.
It's probably on a Wednesday because Christmas fell on a Wednesday last year.
That was the first year they'd ever done it, I think was my point. That's the first time they'd ever played on a Wednesday for Christmas. I don't know if you knew that. Maybe Amy did. Anyways, we got to get to even more news. Trey Hendrickson, the news comes out. Remember, guys, before the draft, we're like, oh, do whatever you got to do to get – at least I was. Do whatever you got to do to get a Trey Hendrickson. I don't care what – well, reportedly, coming out of Trey Hendrickson's camp is that they have cut off all communication, or at least he has, with the Bengals. And I don't know where that leaves him. I will say, after the draft, I'm good. Like, I don't need Trey Hendrickson to be a part of anything we got going on here. We've addressed that position. I'm not saying I wouldn't have him, and I'm not saying he wouldn't fit. My only point at this point is we have other holes in other places that I would much rather go on a limb to fill.
I got a tweet yesterday when this story broke, and I was trying to give the guys credit, but I can't find him. But he said, hey, what do we think? I mean, do we have any interest? And all I responded with, he said, here it is, St. Philip. And he said, do the Birds still need him? I don't know. And I said, need? You always need great playmakers on defense.
That's fair.
I would still make the phone call because there is, and you've actually hammered this in my head about there's nothing better than a guy like Trey Hendrickson, who's a developmental guy.
Yeah.
A guy that didn't do it for 3 years in the league, and then his fourth year, he just all of a sudden is one of the top five pass rushers in the NFL. Yeah, I'll go get him. You know what else he does? He helps Jalen Walker because now Jalen Walker can kind of mix in and do other things. I would call him, but I wouldn't give up the farm for him.
Yeah, I think it's worth kicking the tires on. But like I said, if we're going to like put out any of the money or any kind of capital we have, to me, I'm looking at, you know, a gap defender, those kind of things. So we'll see what kind of happens there. Maybe another corner. Asante Samuel Jr. is visiting the Saints today, so that's something to keep an eye on as well. We are going to go to break. I'm going to make sure we have plenty of time because when we come back on the other side, we will hit the Atlanta Braves. We also have a monumental moment in the show. We're going to do a Life of Squid Top 5 Tuesday.
Yeah, we will. In honor of the Falcons drafting James Pierce Jr. and Jalen Walker, who we hope will be our next great, or our first really great pass rush duo.
Shout out Ray Edward.
Top pass rush duos in the history of the NFL. The history based on my metrics. Next, Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and
the Odyssey app.
Ground ball up the middle. Here comes Eli White, and the Cardiac Kids find a way.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, there it is. You hear it. And then soon after, he wore the double bubble hat. Now he just her mind can't comprehend the double bubble hat.
I feel like I'm the Braves' mother, where I'm just like, you've worked so hard to be here. You're a millionaire, and you're putting a double bubble hat on your head.
To be fair, a lot of the home run celebrations in Major League Baseball probably don't make mothers happy. There's a lot of just, what was it? Was it last year was the summer sausage? Do you remember that? There was a team that had like a summer sausage that they would throw around the dugout.
I think it was the Brewers, wasn't it?
Might have been the Brewers or the Twins or something like that. Yeah. They just had an old summer sausage that they would just throw to each other. And the person who hit the last home run would just keep it.
You know, a bunch of guys throwing the sausage around.
Yeah, so Paul.
Boys will be boys.
Good. And to your point, Allie, I think the double bubble bucket hat is better for the walk-off. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Until a hat company decides that it's not licensed and they it's infringing.
Again, it's just it's just a bucket. You know what I mean? It's just a bucket. calm down, hat company. It's just a bucket, man. But
did you like Double Bubble better or Big League Chew?
That's easy. Big League Chew.
No, I think I was Double Bubble.
Yeah. Neither one of them necessarily held their flavor too
long. Yeah, I was going to say.
With the fruit stripe, that's the worst one. Zebra.
Fruit stripe. Yeah, anyways. The Braves.
Oh, the
zebra.
Yeah, I remember that zebra gum.
Yeah, fruit stripe.
That didn't last long.
4-3 last night on the back of Grant Holmes and company being able to get it done.
Grant Holmes
man.
Was good last night, man.
Another one-run victory. 8 in a row, we talked about it earlier. Just insane to really put. But, yeah, I'm with you. Let's talk about Grant Holmes for a second. 6 2/3. One earned. And it's not like – and we keep saying this, and I have to add this caveat. Everybody's like, well, it's not like the Nationals are knocking the cover off the ball. Okay, you just got beat 2 out of 3 from the Pirates, who just fired their manager. It is what
yeah,
it
but
is.
Can we not,
wins are wins in Major League Baseball.
Can we not do that? Can because that – that's a Major League Baseball team, and Grant Holmes, a guy who was basically out of options with the Dodgers. They got basically sent him packing, and you brought him up on what Father's Day last year in a spot. He came in a game on Father's Day in relief, a long relief of I believe Charlie Morton, and he all of a sudden he just came on, and now he's starting, and he's become a guy that every fifth day, he goes out there and gives you 6 innings, 2 to 3 runs earned, and which is a quality start.
Yeah.
And last night he held a team that was not the greatest team to 1 run in 6 innings. That is like I don't want to hear that. It was only the Dodgers when he did it against them, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's one of the best lineups in baseball. So, and I know it's not you doing it, but I hate that. I hate the caveat thing drives me nuts. Or a guy went out there and did his freaking job.
Yeah, and again, that's why I bring it up. It's like, dude, I don't care. Like, I don't care. It's the whole sack conversation
yeah,
you and I have.
It.
Well, it was a second effort sack. Oh, I don't care. It's a freaking sack.
When you have 31 of them in a season, I'll take all the second effort ones I can get.
And isn't it funny, too? I'm just looking at Allie because I know she deals with this. Isn't it funny how the male mind works where it's like, I can't remember what I ate for lunch yesterday, but I can remember the fact that when you started talking about Grant Holmes on Father's Day coming to release of Charlie Morton, I'm like, yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. I don't know how, of all things, that's what pops into our minds. It's like, yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I definitely remember the summer sausage and the Milwaukee Brewers dugout, and I don't remember, shoes my kids wearing
I just
today.
Think of the guy that will write that on Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, dude, I remember what you were that guy in college, and you're like, you were the guy that the girl was like, yeah, I'll take one for the team. And yet you're okay.
You're the guy
sitting here saying, yeah, but it was the Nationals. Like, oh, does that make you feel better about who you are?
No,
cool.
There's nothing going on.
I get
on
so irritated.
The Nationals do have, I think, the worst ERA in Major League Baseball.
Four runs.
I was going to say, and you know what's interesting about this yesterday? And I was thinking watching the game, guys, tell me if I'm wrong. Strangely enough, and we've always talked about the 4-run plateau when it comes to the Braves. If they don't score 4, they like never win, and it's been that way for a couple of years now. But I was watching, and I was sitting there watching them last night, and somehow they looked better last night offensively. Even the outs they were getting looked like
because they were hitting the ball.
They
hard.
Looked like hard hit yeah. balls. Like even yeah. Ozzie Albies had a line out. I think Sean Murphy had a line out to the outfield. It was like one of these is going to fall at some point,
dude.
And it did when you needed it most. I don't know why I felt like just suddenly their offense looked better. But it just did. It just looked better last night.
Because Ozuna hit a home run. And Verdugo had 2 hits at the top of the lineup. And
it probably has more to do with Verdugo
and you had,
than Ozuna, yeah.
What was it, 3 straight 2-out singles? I think 3 straight 2-out singles to produce the first 2 runs.
Yeah.
And then you give it up. You tie the game. They tie the game up. And then you go to the 9th. And Eli White leads off with a single. Mm. And then Nick Allen gets a sacrifice. And then Verdugo comes up and gets a single right in the middle. So it was like when your backs were against the wall, you went boom, boom, boom. And all 3 of those are production. A sacrifice in this lineup,
Talk dirty.
Is producing.
Woo!
Okay? You might as well Ehrlich Bachman'd it. And pulled it out on the table for us and showed us what you were worth and then hit a home run or something.
I mean, all the sack balls.
Yeah.
Do you think because of that error that Nick Allen made, he was immediately like, guys, I'm going to sacrifice myself?
Yeah.
I got to do it.
I don't know.
I think Nick Allen should always sacrifice himself because his glove is better than his bat, and he earned. But look, give him credit. Guy's got a 300 on base percentage for what he's doing. He's at the 9 hole. Maybe Allie. Maybe he was like, I'll do whatever. I just think that when you have guys like that, and then they can immediately go in there and not only pick up the team from their own mistake, but you know, you pick them up too, is what Eli and Verdugo did.
Yeah, I tweeted it last night when he makes the error and throws it Pat Matt Olson, both runs score to tie the game. I was like, dude, what a time for your first year of the season. He's been so stinking good at shortstop. The arm strength's not great, but man, his range is insane.
And he rushed it.
And it goes back to the double play they turned when he turned it at second, and Ozzie gets the ground ball with C.J. Abrams, I think, was grounding into. Like, dude, that is a fast runner. And his turn at second base was insanely good, and he doesn't have the arm strength to make it look any better than it already was.
Yeah, sometimes that release can make up for that just pure, you know, arm strength that he doesn't, that Arcia had, that he doesn't. I think they scored that as a single and a throwing error.
Yeah.
So it means one of those runs was earned for Iglesias. And the only reason I point that out is if the scorer is thinking through that in real time, you got to think that maybe in Allen's mind, he rushes it just because he thinks that runner takes off and is already rounding. Yeah. But the throwing error is what
makes
score.
It's like a weird double clutch. He had like a double clutch in his glove, which Iglesias, I don't know if that ball had Vaseline on or what, but Iglesias just dealt with the same thing at the mound.
Dropped it, then couldn't reach for it blindly, couldn't grab it.
Like
and
a
then,
Little League game for a minute there.
And that's funny how those things work, yeah. But you know what? Let's now get to the greatest top five in the morning shift
Boo
history.
Boo this man. Boo!
That's right. Little Baron Burton's W sauce. And then you do have the Bloody Mary mix. I got to bring Allie some. She's got to remind me, and I got to bring her some Bloody Mary mix.
100%.
And New Realm Brewing, the Owl End Lager. I got to go hang out with my boy Chaz. We were supposed to catch up, and then, you know, the baby happened and stuff.
Life comes at you fast.
The Owl End Lager, the official beer of Kennesaw State Athletics. All right. So you guys were hammering me about your top five, and I can never dwindle top five songs or bands or anything down. It's just tough for me. That's one I didn't want to do a TV show list. I was going to do a food-related one, but it kept popping in my head is James Pierce and Jalen Walker, mm-hmm. and I wanted it to be themed.
Okay.
Pass rush duos, which is one we hope this turns into for us. And there's some lists that are out there. I don't agree with them necessarily, and I start thinking, and you got to go through some of the greatest pass rushers of all time, and I mix this with guys that I watched and guys that I also saw parts of their career and maybe not I don't recall as much a full duo. I remember some of these guys, but there's one that popped in my head, my nostalgic pick, my number six, my honorable mention, as you should say, and it's two guys that played in Pittsburgh for only 3 years. It is Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green. Now, remember, Lil Squid in 93, 94, 95. You know what? I'm 10, 11, and 12. And I see this dude with like the neck roll and the big face mask,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
number 95 on mm-hmm. one side. And then this dude that looks like some kind of Game of Thrones extra. And
looks like a wrestler, which he was.
Yeah, Kevin Green with the long hair and the beard and the Steelers. These guys in only 3 seasons combined for 58 sacks in their tenure.
Wow.
The best season coming in 1994 when they had a combined 24 sacks. So that's my honorable mention.
Solid.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not supposed to start with number one, right? You're supposed to start
with
number 5.
I think it's number 5 first.
Okay. Number 5 for me is two other guys that I watched for years. They played in 4 straight Super Bowls together. One of them played here in Atlanta and is an Alabama player.
Mm.
Cornelius Bennett and Bruce Smith, they're my 5th best pass rush duo of all time.
Wow.
They played 9 seasons together, totaling 157.5 sacks from 87 to 95, including 2 seasons of back-to-back in 87 and 88 of 20.5 sack seasons combined.
Yeah, when you said Bama player, I thought Derek Thomas was coming out, but Cornelius Bennett, definitely a stud.
All right, this is another one that I got to watch. One of them also played here as well. These two played for the Colts in the heyday of the Colts. Dwight in Indianapolis. Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis played from 2003 to 12 together. That was 10 seasons. They combined for 186 sacks, including the peak year of 2004, where they combined for 26.5 sacks. These guys were absolutely lethal. We always remember Indianapolis for the offense.
I was going to say.
But these guys were dominant.
How many Hall of Famers came off of those Indianapolis rosters from that era, man? A lot of them on offense, but definitely a couple of studs on defense. That's good. We're good so far.
All right. This is another Alabama
Roll Tide product.
I watched these guys play as well. I remember watching them so many years. They were fun to watch. Neil Smith and Derek Thomas. And Neil Smith was what, like more like a five technique, Mike?
Yeah, it's
edge and a 3-4. And Derek Thomas was that stand-up guy. These guys played only 8 seasons together because Neil left for the Broncos, but they combined for 181 sacks from 89 to 96. Including a 29.5 sack season in 90 and a 29 sack season in 92. There were some great 3-4 defenses that had pass rush back then, and this was one of them.
Yeah, 6 playoff berths for that duo, 4 different quarterbacks. It tells you how good they were defensively.
Maybe the greatest defensive player to ever step foot on a football field.
Be careful here. Be very careful here.
Lawrence freaking Taylor.
Okay.
And Leonard Marshall, who was next. He was also, these were two guys that would stand up a lot in another 3-4. They played together from 83 and 92. I remember as a kid watching Marshall flush Joe Montana out of the pocket in the 1990 NFC. It was actually in the year 91, but 90 NFC championship game. And then Taylor whiffs on him, and Leonard Marshall hits him from behind. Pretty much ended Montana's San Francisco career. They played 10 seasons together. Get this number. 198.5 sacks from 1983 to 1992, including 32.5 sacks in the Super Bowl season of 1986. Mike, tell me how many sacks the Falcons had combined as a team last year.
I don't want to talk about it.
Tell me.
No.
Say the number.
No.
Say it.
No.
Say it.
31.
Goodness gracious.
It's a soft spot. This better be good. I'm just telling you.
The greatest.
You've already left off 4.
The greatest pass rush duo of all time. The Minister of Defense.
Yeah.
With the man, Clyde Simmons. They were together from 86 to 92. Jerome Brown was in there for some of that before his early passing and RIP. They played 7 seasons together. 182 sacks in 7 seasons, including...
Is that good?
Including 33 sacks in 1992, where the Minister of Defense himself, Reggie White, had 14, and Clyde Simmons had 19 sacks that year. Again, 33 sacks in one season. That is the 5 best pass rush duos of all time.
Yeah, let's give them a courtesy round of applause.
Okay, good job.
There was
a
lot of effort put in there.
There might be some names missing,
There's
though.
Definitely, Allie, some names missing. And the good news
Find
is...
Find me a duo that had a better sack season than 33 combined in one season.
The good news is we got a wake-up call coming up on the other side.
Bring the phone number
is 404-726-0929. The Twitter handle is at 929MorningShift. I think this guy missed at least 3 duos. And we'll get to those on the other side. Make sure you call in and let us know how you feel about his Top 5 Tuesday. Maybe you got something else you want to throw out there. Stick with us. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.